Hello and welcome into this edition of Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav on a wilder than expected Ryder Cup Sunday when the European team won just a single match. The Europeans had such a commanding lead heading into Sunday singles that in the end, it mattered little. Rex, it was Europe 15, the United States 13, and just like usual, we're saluting Europeans' brilliance and questioning where the Americans go from here.
I think it's a testament to the Ryder Cup that even going into a Sunday where it seemed like history had already decided this. I think on the podcast on Saturday night, you and I had pretty much written the American team off just because it had never been done before. No team had ever come back.
7 points. Of course we wrote them off.
Yes, it was ridiculous. And actually, it turned out, by the way, to be 7.5 points. We're going to get into the Victor Hovland situation, which in and of itself was an interesting scenario. However, this is what the Ryder Cup does. I think it was about four. It was exactly 4:26. It was late into the game. All the matches were late into the back nine. And I actually scribbled into my notes that time because it seemed like that was the time that everyone in the crowd, and it seemed like everyone on the American team, seemed to look up at leaderboards and realize that we can get this done. This is pretty amazing. And that this was a huge turnaround. I was sitting on the first tee when Rory teed off early this morning, and I had a colleague turn to me and goes, "How many American flags do you need to see on that board before you think the Americans actually have some sort of hope?" And I looked at him like he was out of his mind and go, "All of them. I need to see all 12 American flags to give them any kind of chance at
all."
We
almost did. The crazy part is that we almost did. We looked up on the leaderboard. It was red, or I believe it was gray.
Tie.
I'm colorblind. I believe
tie.
It was gray.
It was gray.
It was signaling a tie. But you're exactly right, Rex. It was like 4:30 or 4:45. We looked up on the leaderboard. The last three matches were all tied. Had the Americans won those out, and there was about 3 to 4 holes, depending on which player you're talking about, could have done that, we would be looking at an all-time either collapse or comeback for the ages, like one of the best in sports history. Instead, we just end up with a two-point loss.
Well, and the idea that I walked away from is Sunday at the Ryder Cup confirmed, I think, what you and I both thought we knew on Saturday night. The first thing is Luke Donald is a brilliant captain and brilliant tactician and will go down as the greatest captain, not just European, but I think Europe or US all time. And I do think he's going to get a third term in a Adair manner coming up in 2 years. We'll get into that later as well. And it also proved we don't know what Keegan Bradley is. And the reason I say that, to get straight into the meat of the subject, is because after two matches, it seems like the American team was just outclassed after those two team sessions on Friday and Saturday. And then we see what transpires on Sunday. And it just proves the point that Europeans are not 7 points better than that U.S. team. You get an idea exactly how close these teams are. In fact, you get an idea that the Americans, probably individually on paper, are better head-to-head, if you give them 18 holes and you give them an opportunity. And it shows that when you have these team sessions and all the nuance and all the difficulties that go into it, a good captain makes all the difference in the world. And Luke Donald is a really good captain. He had his team ready. Whatever the theme was that he leaned into this time around, it worked perfectly. Whereas with Keegan Bradley, and we can start picking him apart now, I was really reluctant to do this after Friday's session. I was really reluctant to do it after Saturday's session. But the fact of the matter is, he got some things wrong that I think it's pretty easy to point out. The golf course was set up really incorrectly. We had something closer to the Barclays, the PGA Tour event, the playoff event that was played at Bethpage, than we did the U.S. Open. And they needed the U.S. Open layout with that team they had. They had the order of play wrong. Should have started with four ball instead of foursomes. The Americans struggle in foursomes. Why did you put them behind the eight ball, essentially? Why did you take the crowd out of it first thing in the morning on both team session days? Secondly, he got some of the pairings really wrong. I'm going to go straight to Colin Morikawa and Harris English. And it's one thing to get it wrong right out of the gates. You had an idea. You gave it a shot on Friday. It clearly didn't work. It actually failed miserably. And yet you wanted to stay with it. You got punched in the mouth, like Mike Tyson talks about all the time. And your response was, "I think I want to get punched in the mouth again." And I think you can keep going down the line. He just made errors that seem unforced. His statisticians didn't seem nearly as good as Eduardo Molinari and the European statisticians. And this is the pitfall of being a captain. And I think Keegan Bradley is going to have to take this one.
All right. First of all, put your knife away. Let's focus first on Luke Donald, who, if Keegan Bradley is going to go down as a historical figure, as a player who was probably reinstalled a little bit too early
as a captain, Luke Donald should be heralded, should be celebrated as arguably, if not clearly, the best Ryder Cup captain of all time. You look at what Europe did this past week at Bethpage Black. Rex, they had a 7-point lead heading into Sunday. That was the biggest in the modern era, and you could make the argument that it was the best 2 days that have ever been played in the Ryder Cup over those foursomes and those four-ball methods, considering the quality of the play, considering the opponents, considering the crowd, considering the hostile atmosphere, considering the golf course. Like, this is all, I think, when you look in combination, a monument to Luke Donald as the greatest captain ever. You look sort of big picture at what his plan was heading into the week. He was reinstalled as an away captain for the first time in Europe's history. They tweaked the point system for qualifying, essentially to try and limit the number of rookies and inexperience you're going to have, waiting certain tournaments on the PGA Tour and DP World Tour to sort of make it really, really difficult for a first-timer to get on that team. Rasmus Højgaard, who did earn one of those qualifying spots, did so largely on what he did in the marquee events in the DP World Tour late last year. He was the only other addition to this team. Otherwise, they brought 11 of the 12 from Rome. So that was the second thing. And third, for the very first time, they had the scouting trip to Bethpage Black, essentially to reaffirm the pairings that they had set, to reaffirm their expectations for the golf course and making sure that was spot on in terms of their preparation and what they wanted to do pairings-wise with that as well. It's the big picture details. It's the little details, like having a theme of we've already done this before. This could be the fifth time that we can do it. It's the small things, going to the shampoo in the hotel or the bedding in the hotel or putting stickers to cover up some of the cracks that were appearing to let light in. Like, everything that made Luke Donald a former world number one and a player who, despite his diminutive stature, you know, ascended to the highest parts of the world order, like all of those little details that made him a great player, clearly have translated to him being a great captain. He is beloved by his backroom staff. He is beloved by his players. He is beloved by his fans. Two more years kept ringing out over and over all weekend long at Bethpage Black. I'm with you. It would be a shock if Luke Donald is not the captain for Adair Manor in 2027.
I had just stopped hearing ole, ole, ole in my head from Rome 2 years ago. Did not think I was going to hear it for another 2 years echoing through my head. But yeah, it's amazing. The small number, the slice of European fans at Bethpage somehow outclassed the New York fans. It was amazing how it happened. And you're absolutely right. I mean, all credit has to go to Luke Donald and that team, I will say as well. When I talk about this being maybe arguably the best European team, I wouldn't make Luke Donald being the best captain an argument. I feel like that's kind of a fact now. This simply does not happen in the modern era with as close as the game is between the two sides. When it comes to this team, though, I think you can make a really good argument, not just what they did here, but what they did in Rome. And as you pointed out, with just one player difference, now you fast forward these 2 years. It's where Rory talked about it tonight. He got all of that confidence, saying that he felt like this was their best chance to come in and finally win an away Ryder Cup. He said, honestly, in 2021, Whistling Straits, really didn't feel like I had much of a chance. Really didn't feel like that was an opportunity.
I mean, that was the low point for Ryder Cup Europe. They lost 19-9. It was sort of a changing of the guard with the Sergios and the Westwoods and the Poulters. They were aging out. They really, it seemed like the cupboard was going to be a little bit bare for some of their young talent. All of a sudden, Rex, like, we're talking 4 years later, and I think you and I are both expecting Europe to win in a rout when we get to Ireland in 2 years' time.
Well, and actually, Roy McIlroy called out a writer who, after that 2021 Ryder Cup, referenced a decade of dominance for the U.S. team. And it was probably, I don't want to say it's a fair comment, but it was probably something that a lot of people were thinking because of how dominant that victory was. And now you fast forward, and it seems like the Europeans have moved on to the next generation and the next captain. And you and I talked about it in a podcast last week, the idea that had it not been for Liv Goff, there's a really good possibility that Luke Donald never would have been a European captain. He only got Rome because Henrik Stenson, who had the job, joined Liv Goff, and they had to adjust. They had to pivot, and they moved to Luke Donald. Look at the players that would have been captains. Locks. This isn't up for debate. It would have been Sergio Garcia this time at Bethpage. There's no doubt in my mind about that. It would have been Lee Westwood at some point. It would have been Ian Poulter at some point. And then you're probably
Graham McDowell.
Martin Keimer, like, suddenly you're a decade down the road And at that point, Luke Donald has probably aged out of the window. You start having conversations about Justin Rose and Rory McIlroy. So it's really sort of this historic happening that put him in this position. And I did ask Guy Kennings, the CEO of DP World Tour, about the possibility of three in a row. And he did not dismiss it. He said, look, we have a process. And we sit down and we talk about this and we decide what's best for the team. And he kind of walked me through the process of what happened 2 years ago. It wasn't too long after Rome and that convincing victory that they all sat down and decided he's our guy. And they all flew to South Florida, to Jupiter, and sat down with him and convinced him to do it. My only question is, yes, of course he should do it. The players want him. The fans want him. DP World Tour wants him. European Ryder Cup probably needs him. I don't know that Luke wants it. It's a lot of responsibility. This has consumed 4 years of his life. Clearly, this means everything to him, but it does take a lot out of you.
It certainly does. That'd be a six-year commitment, five and a half, since he was a little bit of a late starter with Henrik Stenson being removed from the job. And like, there's such a stark comparison between what Luke Donald has done, essentially putting his entire playing career to the side to focus solely on being the European Ryder Cup captain, and what Keegan Bradley was dealing with, probably unfairly to him, over the past year and a half, trying to balance his priorities as a top 25 player in the world with really good PGA Tour status, trying to win PGA Tour events, trying to sort of cement his legacy that way. Oh, also while doing something that was clearly consuming every other part and time of his day. So I give Keegan a lot of credit. I think it's unfortunate. We're certainly going to get into him in just a little bit. But this comes from the top on down and what Luke Donald has installed here. And then when you also support him, Rex, with like a statistical genius like Eduardo Molinari, who is just running laps around the Americans' statistical team, he has clearly got buy-in from the top players on the European side, from Rory McIlroy, who has been as committed as anyone to bringing a Ryder Cup back to Europe and winning one on American soil. John Rahm doing what he needed to do to make sure he was eligible for the Ryder Cup. Tommy Fleetwood playing the best golf of his career. Like, this is a win for the power of communication, continuity, camaraderie, consistency, clarity, like passion, purpose, perspective. Like, these are the only ways that you can explain what the European model is, because for the other 103 weeks in this two-year cycle, outside of Rory McIlroy, the Americans simply outclass the Europeans. You look at the world landscape. You look at who's winning major championships. You look at who's winning signature events. You look at who's winning playoff events. By and large, those tournaments are dominated by the Americans. And so why are we now at a point where it's 11 of 15 Ryder Cups have been won by the Europeans? To me, it comes back to the continuity and the leadership. The American side is bereft of leadership. And so when you fast forward to 2 years, what's going to happen? Who's going to be the European Ryder Cup captain? Luke Donald makes obviously a ton of sense as sort of a bridge captain to something else. Justin Rose is actually the odds maker's favorite to get that job. But Rex, I think you could potentially have the same situation that we just had with Keegan Bradley, where Justin Rose just won a PGA Tour playoff event. He is going to be fully exempt on the PGA Tour by the time summer 2027 rolls around. He's only going to be 47. And this is a player who, as we just saw over 3 days at Bethpage Black, has a ton of game left in him, even in his mid-40s, reinvesting so much time and energy and resources into his body, making sure his body is sound, making sure his game is sound, making sure his mind is right. Like, to me, I think it's unfair for Justin Rose, because you would have to make this appointment in the next 3 or 4 months. Traditionally, this is made, what, in January or February of the following year? I don't think Justin Rose is quite ready. Luke Donald still, even if he doesn't necessarily want it, even if it's going to be a two-year commitment, he makes a lot of sense as a bridge year captain.
Well, and maybe he does. I don't want to speak for Luke. And in the heat of the moment, after an exhausting 2 years, after an exhausting week, I'm sure he's thinking to himself, I just need to get to that hotel room where no light can get in the door and sleep in the comfy bed that I've created for myself. The part about that press conference that really impressed me the most is Luke Donald being maximum. Luke Donald was kind of being peppered with questions about, why are you so good? Like, we're trying to get to, what is the secret sauce here? Like, unravel the sausage and give us an idea of exactly how you're able to pull this off. And he sort of sheepishly sort of shrugged and looked, put his head down in his hands and like, I've got 12 good players. And almost immediately, Rory McIlroy, who was sitting just to his left, goes, come on, Like, stop. Just stop doing that. Yes, you have 12 really good players, but you find a way to motivate us now in back-to-back Ryder Cups when it would have been really easy. Again, I go back to what happened on Sunday, and the Americans absolutely outclassed that European team on Sunday. As you pointed out, they only won one full point, and we were sweating, or they were sweating, until the very end. And that gives you an idea of these teams are very close. It did not look like that on paper on Saturday night. And I would say it's largely because of all those little things that Luke Donald does. I mentioned the idea that as recently as 2 months ago, someone from the European Tour was telling me that something about Luke, something he had done in Rome that I hadn't heard before. And it's a little thing. It's a patch inside the sweater that no one else can see, but the player knows it's there. We're still learning things about Rome. I can only imagine 2 years from now what we're learning about this week at Bethpage.
Just a masterclass in leadership, which brings us, Rex, to the Americans.
Now night's out.
What had been an unmitigated disaster, a meltdown of epic proportions, at least was somewhat salvaged on Sunday, I would argue. You had some pretty spirited rallies. We're going to get into player grades after the commercial break about you know who really stepped up. And they were largely doing so because they wanted to do it for Keegan. They wanted to do it for personal pride. They wanted to do it because legitimately they believed that they could beat the European team on Sunday. But when you're looking at the PGA of America, at Captain Keegan Bradley, at the American players, who is most to blame for this 2-point loss in the first time since 2012 the Americans have lost on home soil?
I mean, I think I've already let that cat out of the bag. It's going to be Keegan, and Keegan knows it. That's
so. Keegan, in your mind, is shouldering the majority of the blame here. That's what you're saying.
Absolutely, because a captain can
absolutely
make a difference. Yes, I mean, Look, we're going to talk a lot about Scottie Scheffler, as we should. The world number one did not show up for the American team, and you have to have your horses show up. Luke Donald talked endlessly about the idea that the fact that Rory played well and John Rahm played well and Tommy Fleetwood played well, that makes his job really easy. But if you're trying to find a reason why Scottie Scheffler didn't play well, I'm sure there's something internal that Scotty, in a very emotional interview this afternoon, said that he's going to have to sit and think about this one. Like, I'm just not quite sure. He came in here as a commanding world number one. He came in here with some confidence that he didn't have in Rome 2 years ago. He was still sort of lost with his putting 2 years ago. He just started working with Phil Kenyon. Now he showed up here 2 years down the road, so accomplished, now turned his putting from a weakness into a strength. I think you and I both anticipated him to lead this team. I think the line that we both came up with, they need 4 or 5 points from him. They got one, and it was a really hard grinding 1 point against Rory McIlroy in Sunday singles that I guess it meant something in the big scheme of things because it made it closer. But in retrospect, I don't know that it did. You can go to the individual performances and pick them apart. Absolutely. I'm not absolving.
And we will.
any of the players of responsibility. But it ultimately falls on the captain. Keegan knows that. He has owned that since the very beginning. And I don't want to make this sound like Keegan didn't make good decisions. He absolutely did. Keegan not picking himself, I think, was not only the best decision, but it was one of the most selfless acts I've ever seen in sports. He should have been on that team by every measure. You can sit and break it down however you want. He's the only one. I sat down on Sunday morning sort of trying to pick this apart. Give me someone that he did not pick or that he should have picked instead of one of the 6 picks that he made. No offense to Brian Harman. He wasn't going to make a difference to this team. I can keep going down the list. The only name I could go back to is maybe Keegan, based on how he was playing, but he did the right thing for what was for the team. I would say some of the adjustments he made were brilliant. I mean, I said he stuck to the plan. The idea that he ended up putting Bryson DeChambeau out first in foursomes on the second day, this time with Cam Young, that turned into the only point for the Americans and a commanding victory. So it's not as though he didn't pull some of the right strings, but the big ones he absolutely missed on. He said it himself. Like, he said it multiple times tonight. He didn't get the golf course set up right. And I truly think that made the difference.
Yeah. Look, I really do genuinely feel bad for Keegan Bradley. Yeah. This was a player who was dramatically snubbed for the team that he was desperate to make in 2023. He was hired for a job that he was not politicking for. He was not petitioning for. He was not lobbying for. He did not want to be the U.S. Ryder Cup captain when he was named that in 2024. But it's the opportunity of a lifetime, and he felt like he had to do so. He still wanted to make the team, Rex. you could still hear like this tinge of sadness and disappointment that he didn't put himself in a position where he automatically qualified for the team, or that it was so blatantly obvious to everyone that he should be on the team and that he should be a captain's pick for that team. You could still hear it even early week in his press conference saying that, yeah, he caught himself thinking, you know, almost every second would have been like with his clubs striding down.
He seemed so tortured in that moment. I really felt bad for him in that moment.
And so, like, I feel bad for him in that sense, that this was not necessarily a job he wanted. Now he's going to be remembered alongside some of the other captains, a Hal Sutton, a Davis Love III, who lost on home soil. And when you sort of fast forward 2 years in time, September 2027, he's going to be 41 years old. Like, it's hard to imagine he's going to sustain this level of form, and he may have missed out a window to play on that team. So he wouldn't have played in 2023. He didn't play this year, and now potentially he wouldn't play in 2027 for, again, a team that he loves dearly. I'm with you that he did make some mistakes. A couple of pairings were certainly head scratchers. The course setup, he said he would absolutely do it all over again, did not trust his intuition, thinking that it needed to be a more ferocious test. Instead, they shaved all the rough. It was just 2 inches in length, coupled with the early week rain and the soft, really soft receptive greens. Like, it just did not match up where there was much of a penalty, if at all, for missing. And so you're thinking about a player who could potentially have helped this U.S. team. To me, that player potentially could have been like Chris Goddard, who can absolutely hammer it, just send it, and then stick your irons close and just have a field day. So turning, you know, what should have been a supreme ball striking challenge, just like it was in the U.S. Open, just like it was in the 2019 PGA, and turning it into a really soft birdie fest and a putting contest, and essentially reducing the skill, which the Americans had in spades, which is ball striking, was clearly a mistake, and Keegan Bradley admitted as such. Entering singles, though, Rex, Europe had 8 of the 9 best putters, statistically, according to our friends at Data Golf. And so Keegan's response was essentially just sort of shrugging his shoulders, like, what are you going to do? This was generationally great. This was historically great putting. Did Keegan aid the Europeans in helping them along those lines with some of the pairings with the golf course setup? Absolutely. But I think he was quick to point out somewhat correctly that this was still just an incredible performance by the Europeans. Sometimes you just get beat. You can have a great plan. Americans didn't have necessarily a great plan. You can have some great pairings. Again, the Americans had some faults in some of their pairings, but they flat out got beat. Over the first 2 days, they trailed by 7 heading into singles, and that is why they lost this Ryder Cup.
And you mentioned Eduardo Molinari, and Luke Donald talked a little bit about his relationship with Eduardo tonight and the idea that they sit for hours parsing through things about pairings, about golf course setup, about who picks should be. Everything is covered. Again, this goes to that attention to detail that make Luke such a brilliant captain. On the American side, it's a company called Scouts, Inc., who have essentially been their stats program since Hazeltine a few years ago. It was kind of, that was part of the aftermath of the task force and, you know, the players getting more empowered and getting more involved about who the captains were. It seems this time around, the stats guys won on the European side. When you look at
like 10-8 picks.
Yes, I think that was our colleague Brandel Chambly's line. When you look at what the picks were, when you looked at, you pointed out, you leaned into the idea that Morikawa and Harris English pairing was 132 out of 132 possible pairings stats wise. I don't know how they come up with that number. That seems outlandish to me that it could be absolutely last. But yes, I think you can point to it and say they totally missed on that front. And you're absolutely right. I'll just go to the two foursome sessions. And that's the easiest way to quantify this. When you have a foursomes groups that lays 7 birdies on you through 14 holes, that does not happen in alternate shot. And that's what Ludvig Åberg and Matt Fitzpatrick did on day one. You're always going to lose that match. You're never going to. You look at what Rory McIlroy and Tommy Fleetwood did on day one. They were 5 under through 15 holes. You look at Hatton and John Rahm on day one. They were 5 under. You're not going to win those matches. And I keep going back to the idea that Luke Donald, as brilliant as he is, he's got the built-in luxury of having two pairings for specifically foursomes. That's the one that matters here, because that's the one that seems to get away from the Americans so quickly that he can always turn to. There was no thought needed to put into this at all. Those two are who I'm going to send out. Those two groups. Everything, the other two I can tinker with and I can think about and we can maybe experiment a little bit. It is such a powerful force. When you look at what Tommy Fleetwood has done in alternate shot, it is mind-blowing.
It certainly is. So look, Keegan deserves some fault. Obviously, the American players deserve a lot of fault. I would also still like to lay some blame at the feet of the PGA of America as well. I don't think they're necessarily going scot-free here as well. $750 tickets for the week at Bethpage Black gave fans, as we argued on the Saturday Night Podcast, free license to get angry. Pretty flat atmosphere. It's a lot of corporate folks. You had the first tee announcer who literally had to step down heading into Sunday singles after leading a vulgar cheer against Roy McIlroy. Again, late last year, they installed a first-time captain in Keegan Bradley and signed off on four of his assistant captains who had never had any experience prior, who still harbored ambitions of playing on his own team. What the PGA of America did in putting Keegan Bradley is emblematic of everything that's wrong right now with Team USA. Like, let's just try something different. Whereas their opponents for the past two decades plus are all about continuity, consistency, communication, and clarity. As it relates to Team USA, it is a mess. You would think moving forward in 2027, the first and only call should be to Tiger Woods. Give him a 6 to 8 year contract and just say, hey man, we need you. Help lead Team USA. You going down that line as well?
I think I am. I mean, you and I both spent enough time around Paul McGinley, and I think there is literally a huge notebook with all the European secrets in it somewhere. The way he references all the time, I can imagine it's dog-eared and got some sticky notes in there. And like, I can just imagine he's a professional professor walking around with this huge notebook. And you're absolutely right. And I actually wrote that column not that long ago when Tom Watson was picked to lead that team over in the UK. That was a very similar decision. PGA of America felt like they needed to go in a different direction, felt like that they had to find something new. And that new direction was to go back in the wrong direction with Tom Watson. I was not criticizing Tom Watson. He was put in a position that he was never going to succeed because he was so far removed from knowing or having relationships or being able to communicate with that generation. He was two generations removed from the Dustin Johnsons of the world at that point. It was a terrible idea, and it imploded on the PGA of America. And if we remember that press conference with Phil Mickelson, one of the most uncomfortable press conferences you and I have ever attended in our lives. Oh, yeah, just eat it up. That led to the task force and the player empowerment, and we went down that road for essentially a decade. And this was, again, another course correction where the PGA America wanted to go back in the other direction. And yes, I think they panicked a little bit and tried to come up with something new. The Americans simply don't have that continuity. They don't have that big fat book that Paul McGinley carries around.
All right, that's big picture on Team Europe and Team USA. After the break, we'll be diving in to each of the 24 players. Who got A's? Who got F's? Stay tuned for more after this. All right, Rex, in the spirit of my six-year-old's parent-teacher conference this week at home in Nocatee, let's get into report cards for the European team. We're going to do this in alphabetical order, starting with the European team, followed by the Americans. So first up, Ludvig Åberg. What do you have?
I'm really uncomfortable with this because I was a really bad student and like bouncing ideas off you. I feel like I kind of graded a little bit on the high side. So I expect to get some eye rolls from you. Ludvig went 2-2-0, which isn't great considering how the Americans play, but he did get their only singles victory on Sunday. That somehow turned out to be important. If you'd asked me that on Saturday night, I would have rolled my eyes at that. I gave him a B+ simply because he is turning into or will evolve into one of those stars that we just talked about. He will become the Rory McIlroys or the Tommy Fleetwoods or the Justin Roses sooner rather than later. So he needs to do better than 2-2-0, but I went B+.
I went a little bit harsher. Then again, my brother's a professor. My mom was a 40-year teacher. My dad was a principal. So this sort of stuff comes very easily to me. I'm going C+. For Ludvig Åberg. He actually got carried by Matt Fitzpatrick in that Friday foursomes victory, was the Europeans' second weakest player throughout the week. Yes, he did earn the only full point in singles, but otherwise I think his performance was pretty pedestrian, particularly for a player who we thought in Rome 2 years ago was sort of the breakout star. It failed to live up to that, at least to me, this week at Bethpage Black. Speaking of Ludvig Åberg, his partner, Matt Fitzpatrick. What do you have for him?
He went 2-1-1. I thought he had a solid week. I'm going to go with a minus simply because he's such a good plug and play player. And we just talked about foursomes play. What he did in foursomes play specifically on Friday, that set the tone.
You went a minus. Boy, I'm harsh again. I'm going with B for Fitz. Again, he was lights out on that Friday morning to set the tone. Keep in mind, this is a player who entered the week 1-7, literally the all-time worst one-loss record for a player in the Ryder Cup. For him to do what he did, yes, he did cough up a big lead in singles that may have come back to bite him for the European side if things panned out a little bit differently over that final hour. Did not necessarily cost him. I'm going Matt Fitzpatrick with a B. I think that's probably more appropriate for him. Tommy Fleetwood, one of the best players on the golf course at Bethpage Black. I got a feeling where this one's going.
I mean, A plus. I mean, how do you do anything else for him? I'm going to actually go A plus. I think he got the award for, they give out a sportsmanship award for this simply because of what he means.
A sportsmanship award this week at Bethpage Black? We're going to get to the fans later. But there was a sportsmanship award?
That doesn't make a lot of sense. But I think he has become such a staple on this team. And he's become almost like generational with what he's able to do here. And the best part about it is Ian Poulter created a career out of what he did at the Ryder Cup. I think Tommy Fleetwood is doing very, very similar things right now with the idea that not only is he doing it, but he's doing it in a way, we're going to talk a little bit about the crowd. Under those circumstances and with that crowd and some of the things that were being said, the amount of class and the amount of poise that he showed, A plus.
I'm going A, but if an A is like from a 93 to a 96, I'm giving Tommy Fleetwood like the 96 on the A range, like close to an A plus, but not quite. You get me on that one. He was brilliant, Rex, from start to finish. The best player in terms of strokes gained data. The singles loss to Justin Thomas was a little bit surprising, but you have to give JT credit, the way that he battled and hold that putt on the 18th hole to steal the full point. 4-1, Tommy Fleetwood, A. Arrow is pointing up. It's great to see him really build on the confidence that he established with that tour championship and the FedEx Cup title. Can't wait to see what he does, Tommy Fleetwood, in 2026. How about his teammate, Terrell Hatton, who went 3-0-1 this week at Bethpage Black?
Going undefeated is impressive. Doing what he's able to do next to John Rahm, again, a built-in pairing. I can't stress this enough, how important that is for a captain to go into this. Keegan Bradley thought he had some built-in pairings. He thought Russell Henley and Scottie Scheffler were going to be that built-in pairing. You look at historically, Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele were supposed to do that, but you really didn't get the production. So Hatton is the other side of that built-in pairing. So I don't think you can overstate how important he is. He also didn't lose. He went 3-0-1. Bigger thing is, we're going to talk a lot about the crowds. We've already talked a lot about the crowds. We know what a hothead he can be. Never got rattled. A.
I'm giving Terrell Hatton an A as well. So if Tommy Fleetwood was like on the 96 range of that A, I'm giving Terrell Hatton on the 93 range of that A. He certainly formed a formidable duo with John Rahm in foursomes, remained perfect. I thought he performed admirably as sort of the late fill-in, remember, for Victor Hovland, who in the Saturday four balls could not go. Hatton was the late substitute, ended up pitching in with Matt Fitzpatrick to earn a full point there, ended up earning the winning point, not the point that retained the cup. That went to Shane Lowry. We saw the theatrics there. Terrell Hatton was the winning point for Europe to get across the line and get 14.5 points. I'm giving him an A as well. A great week. Looking forward to seeing what sort of potential rules changes are going to be made to accommodate the live players, because Terrell Hatton, John Rahm, those guys absolutely have to be on the European team moving forward. On the other end of the spectrum, Rasmus Højgaard. Genetically, this team was identical to the one in Rome. The only difference is they swapped out a Højgaard, Nikolai in 2023, Rasmus in 2025. What grade did you give him?
I have a tendency to be a little lenient when it comes to the Ryder Cup and rookies simply because of the intensity. You have to work your way into it. I don't think anybody's prepared. Certainly coming to Bethpage, where we had never been before, and that crowd and what it was going to bring. Certainly there should be a bit of a scale or a bit of a curve when it comes to grading, but he did not win anything. He went 0-2-1. He was last in the entire field, not just on the European team, but the entire field in strokes gained total. Gave him an F.
I mean, sorry, we just have to. He only got one and only shot in four balls, and he lost. And Luke Donald made the very difficult decision to sit him all day Saturday, either not wanting to see a repeat performance, or he just felt like he didn't necessarily give them the best chance to earn a really critical point at a critical time for the Europeans to mount what ended up being an insurmountable lead. Then on Sunday in singles, he lost to Ben Griffin when obviously the result was no longer in doubt anymore, but he was the worst player on the golf course statistically. Unfortunately, I have to give Rasmus an F in his first Ryder Cup.
Back to back, we did the same. That's something, right?
This is an interesting one. Victor Hovland. Technically, his record for the week was 1-1-1. What grade are you giving him?
Essentially had to WD from two matches, as you pointed out. He WD'd late in the four-ball match on Saturday afternoon and, of course, didn't play on Sunday. Kind of wanted to give him an incomplete, but that felt like you picking a tie for these matches at the beginning of the week, which it turns out you were closer than
just actually. Saying. Almost happened.
Because we were due. That was your argument. We were absolutely due. He was injured. I think he delivered when he needed to. I think he, again, was part. He is part of this sort of generational switch that we're seeing on this cup. Ludvig Åberg is in that mix with one of the two Højgaards, whichever one qualifies for the team, if not both of them, are part of that mix. So expectations are very high. I ended up going with a B minus, but because he didn't get those last two starts, it's kind of tough.
That's why I gave him an incomplete. Yes, I picked a tie at the beginning of the week, and then I gave him an incomplete. B minus, though, does make a lot of sense, though, Rex. They lost on the Friday four balls with Bob McIntyre. He tweaked his neck injury, though, that he surprisingly had been dealing with for the past 2 months. If you're wondering why Victor Hovland was unable to sustain the success that he showed at the U.S. Open and sort of build on that momentum, clearly it came down to the neck issue that he said he's been dealing with since the Travelers Championship. A bulging disc in his neck does not sound good. That is what an MRI confirmed. I gave him an incomplete, although a B minus. If I was forced to give a grade, certainly seems right. I feel bet for Victor Hovland. I know how badly he wanted to get out there. Luke Donald said he was on the verge of tears when he announced that he wasn't going to be able to go on Sunday. Shane Lowry, what's your grade?
This is going to be a little bit of a stretch. Now, Shane essentially secured the cup. He got the half point. I mean, he got the point that secured 14 points, so made sure Europe retained the cup. The way he celebrated, I think, shows his heart, his soul when it comes to this team. He was 1-0-2, which is not a great record for a player of his caliber. However, having you and I both walked with Rory, especially on Saturday afternoon, when it seems like the crowds were at their worst. And I think if Shane were not, had he not been at Rory's side, I'm not quite sure Rory would have been able to finish that round. And I'm not trying to overstate this, but he really played the role of motivator, big brother, shouldering all the responsibility that he possibly could. I gave him an A, not only for what he did with his golf clubs, but what he was able to do with Rory.
I'm with you. I gave him an A as well. Played some of his most inspired golf in years alongside Rory McIlroy, protecting Rory, defending Rory, sticking up for himself, summoning the goods in really just a really hostile atmosphere, supremely impressed. Walking with his caddy down the 18th hole, he said he has an opportunity to do something that he'd never done in his career before and do something that he argued could be potentially the greatest moment of his golf career on 18 at Bethpage Black in his singles match. What does he do? He pulls it off. Hits an absolute laser inside 6 feet, makes the putt, goes ballistic, and again, has the half point that helped Europe retain the cup. I'm going with an A for Shane Lowry as well. How about Bob McIntyre, who's making his second Ryder Cup appearance?
I'm probably going to give him a grade that his record doesn't justify here. He was 1-1-1, but I felt like as we watched throughout the course of the week, he hit so many quality shots when you needed to. It seems like Bob McIntyre delivered when he had to under the most pressure. It seems that's the role he's going to take with this team. Certainly that's the role he's taken with his career over the course of this year, maybe last year as well. We have seen him evolve from a curious player coming from Europe that seems to have a lot of grit to what I would say is a world-class player that the next time we get to a major, Bob McIntyre should be on our lineup as someone that we talk about. So this has more to do with sort of the flashes I think I saw from Bob than maybe his record indicates. I gave him a B minus.
B minus as well. I'll keep this one short. Clutch putting, really impressive. Have his singles match. I really like his all-around game. I'm expecting more from Bob McIntyre in 2 years' time in Ireland. Rory McIlroy. I know it's going to be an A. Just how high of an A are you willing to go?
I just went with an A simply because sort of the threshold here. And to be clear, you and I have done this for a long time as writers for a magazine and for a website. You had to always give grades, and sort of the litmus test or the threshold that we always would put was the only way you get an A plus if you go undefeated. And Rory went 3-1-1. I guess I could push him over the top just based on style points. It was brutal for him all week long. His wife had to endure things that no one should ever hear. I'm not going to make excuses for the crowd. And maybe to a certain degree, and we talked a little bit about this on the podcast, he brought some of this on himself. But that's sort of the emotional type player he is. And the fact is, he still performed. I like an A.
I'm grading on a curve on this one. I gave Roy McIlroy an A+. He pounded the table 2 years ago, guaranteed a victory, backed it up with another stout performance. No one on property absorbed more abuse than Roy McIlroy and his loved ones, and he responded by being lights out. One of the moments of the entire tournament was on 16, told the fan to shut the F up. What does he do? Turns around and stuffs it to 3 feet. Although he ran out of steam against Scottie Scheffler, it did not end up costing the European Roy McIlroy A+. Job well done, backing up. Wanted the smoke, delivered it right back. John Rahm, what you got?
I think if you would have asked me on Saturday night, it would have been an A, simply because he had one loss. But I think what he means as a team player, as one of those rock players that Luke Donald can depend on. The loss on Sunday was a bit of a surprise because he knew what was going on. He was looking at the leaderboard, and a player of that quality, a player of that standard, you would think could deliver when Europe needed him the most. So I gave him a B+.
B+ for me as well. Reminded everyone, as you mentioned, of his greatness. He was tremendous on and around the greens. Looked Seve-like at times, and then got routed by Xander. Not ideal. Did not appear particularly happy about it either. Justin Rose, Sepp Straka, our last two. Real quick, what do you got?
I think Justin Rose deserves an A. And as you pointed out, like, he seems to be sort of, I think he's called it the Indian summer of his career, but he seems to just keep getting better. And then the way he putted, he wasn't just the best putter this week. He was the best putter by multiples of strokes, just not on the European team, but for the entire field. And that's not always been his strength. He's again one of those Europeans that this brings out his best. A.
I gave him a B+. He combined with Tommy Fleetwood for 19 birdies in four balls, absolutely putting out of his mind. He lost to a red hot Cam Young. Can't ding him too much for that. Up for the limited action we saw Justin Rose, super super impressive. I gave Sepp Straka a C-, another one graded on a curve. He's had some personal things going on at home, very rusty with his iron play, second worst on the team, still got on the board with John Rahm and the four balls lost in his single. Sort of a mixed bag, not entirely unexpected. It was clear that he had other things on his mind, and I'm okay with that.
I gave him a C. He was the biggest unknown coming into this week, but you're right. A lot of things going on at home, and he was a rookie on this team.
All right, let's switch focus to the Americans. Let's start with Sam Burns. I'll go first. D- for me, went 0-1-2. He was the worst U.S. player statistically. He was the best putter on the PGA Tour, ended up being second worst of any player on the greens. Not good.
Did not get a full point for the United States. I went with a D- as well. You pointed out last in strokes gain total. It seems like he had some good partners. He just didn't deliver.
Patrick Cantlay, I gave a C-, 1-3-1. Really gritty performance both sessions on day one, but then turned around and lost both on Saturday when the Americans really needed him for a rally. Went all five sessions and only got 1.5 points out of it. Not ideal for Captain Keegan Bradley and Patrick Cantlay, who they were really depending on.
I'm going to get repetitive when it comes to the American team here. They needed more from their stars. They needed more from this specific star. To get one full point out of him just doesn't work. And he knows it. I'm sure in his heart of hearts, he realizes he did not perform for the team. He did not deliver what he needed to. D-.
Bryson DeChambeau for me was a B-. Certainly gave the Americans a spark. They used him a lot. Went all five sessions because of the golf course setup, I thought made a lot of sense. Couldn't quite pay it off. I think if the greens were firmer, could have been a different story for Bryson. Instead, he typically struggles with his spin control, was just ripping them off the front of the greens. Really gritty comeback in singles, erasing what had been a 5-down deficit on the front nine to Matt Fitzpatrick. So I'm going Bryson DeChambeau, B- in all five sessions.
Wow, I'm really off on that one. You don't see eye to eye with you at all. C- on that one. He was the emotional
YouTube leader. Commenters are just going to destroy you.
I know. I do not hate on Bryson DeChambeau. Trust me, I love watching him play golf. But C minus is the best I can go. He was the emotional leader of this team, and we saw it over the course of 3 days that when he was maximum Bryson DeChambeau, that the crowd absolutely loved him. He brought the best out of them. But just to win one match and the frustration that he showed sometimes, I just don't get it. I didn't have a chance to use this line earlier, so I'm going to use it now. He actually grinded and fought really hard for a half a point on Sunday to keep, continue the Americans' chances. If he'd have given up that full point to the Europeans, I think it was over at that point. However, the mathematician missed the mark because by him only getting a half in that match, it meant that everyone else had to be perfect the rest of the way. I think the celebration was a little premature.
All right, Harris English, this one pains me. It was an F. Went 0-2 in singles, or excuse me, in foursomes. Keegan Bradley put him in the envelope, did not play on Sunday. Got a half point out of it because of what happened with Victor Hovland. Not a good week. Fortunately, I had to give Harry an F.
And being in the envelope does not help. It's very uncomfortable. I never want to be a player in that situation. Certainly you feel for Harris English. I was a little bit more kind. I gave him a D simply because I think the player he was paired with for the first 2 days, Colin Morikawa, was more the bad problem match than he was. It was a bad matchup. So I give him a D.
Probably need to keep this moving a little bit more brief. Ben Griffin for me was a C minus, went 1-1, didn't get another shot after his miserable outing in four balls, then won in singles in a match that didn't matter. Ben Griffin C minus in his rookie debut.
Didn't think he got the fair shake he needed to. I think he needed to get a couple more reps again, just play two matches for the entire week. I gave him a D plus. He had the second worst strokes gained total for the entire tournament. So I don't think he performed the way we thought he was going to perform.
Russell Henley, another one that pains me. For me, this was an F as well. His length or lack thereof off the tee really cost him. His putter went cold with Scottie Scheffler. They couldn't figure out the odds and evens together. The caddies ended up having something that everyone, every analyst had talked about would have been beneficial for this team. He left two putts short, did Russell Henley, on 17 and 18. That really could have made a difference against Shane Lowry and really could have potentially turned the tide for the Americans. F, really tough week for Russ.
And this is expectations, right? We thought he and Scotty were going to be the rock. We thought he and Scotty were going to be the ones that the Americans were going to turn to in foursomes when they needed them the most. They weren't there. D.
Kyle Morikawa, a D for me as well. He was the worst putter on the golf course in the first two matches. Foursome specialist, not his best week.
I was even more harsh. I went with F. I simply think he was the problem with that Harris English mess. Let's just go ahead and call it that. And that seems to me where the U.S. team unraveled.
B plus for me for Xander Schauffele. I thought he was really one of the most pleasant surprises. Ended up thumping John Rahm in Sunday singles to at least give the Americans a shot. This is a player who I think a year ago you would have really depended on. Good to see Xander Schauffele play better than I think a lot of people anticipated.
This might be on the curve. I actually gave him an A simply because he was the biggest unknown coming in this. Had not played golf since the BMW Championship, so you had no idea what he was going to show up with. So I give him an A. Based largely, that was a huge singles win over John Rahm.
Tough one for me. Scottie Scheffler, I gave him a C- after going 1-4. He was the third best U.S. player through 2 days, but it wasn't good enough. His opponents went absolutely berserk against him, 34 birdies in 65 holes. They met the moment. Scottie Scheffler did not. He called it one of the lowest moments of his career. His teammates picked him up, ended up salvaging his week with a pillow fight victory against Rory McIlroy. So C- for Scottie.
You gave the world number one a C-, and he won just 1 point out of five opportunities. That is some kind stuff right there. I don't see it happening. I think the Sunday singles salvaged the week for him, but I gave him a D.
I went with B-pluses for both J.J. Spawn and Justin Thomas, if we're keeping this movie. J.J. Spawn, the rookie, went birdie-birdie to be the lone bright spot for the Americans on Saturday. Justin Thomas continued to be the American spark plug, the guy who actually played with some passion.
That's surprising. J.J. Spawn was this version of Ian Poulter from Medina. Had he not done what he did, the Americans really had no chance going into Sunday. Him grinding out and getting that, he hit probably the two best iron shots coming down the stretch on Saturday on 17 and 18, just to give the Americans a chance. I gave him an A. Justin Thomas, he was emotional. He was a veteran leader. I went with C+.
I think you and I both agree with this one, so I'll wrap it up with Cam Young getting an A. Quite frankly, one of the few bright spots for the Americans. Teamed really well with Justin Thomas, Bryson DeChambeau. Beat Justin Rose in singles. Arrow pointing up the big hitter. Certainly seems poised for a 2026 breakthrough. All right. On the other side of this short break, some final thoughts on the week and the crowd control or lack thereof at Bethpage Black. All right, Rex, we are wrapping up the week at the Ryder Cup. I give you the floor. What are some of your final thoughts from Bethpage Black?
I'm a little surprised that when Bethpage was announced as the Ryder Cup venue, we all knew what this was going to be. We all knew this was going to be gross. It was going to be ugly. There was going to be things that were going to be said that you've never heard at a golf tournament before. You've probably never even heard him at another sporting event before as well. And Rory McIlroy took the brunt of it. And there were things said that were clearly over the top. But I have this thought. I go on this tirade once every 2 years because the hierarchy of golf wants golf to move into mainstream sports. It does not want it to be a niche sport anymore. So it pushes and pushes and pushes. And that's what this was about. You wanted to push the boundaries and take it to a major market. Take it to Bethpage, where you're essentially in the shadow of New York City, and make this big event bigger. I hate to say it, this is mainstream sports. And maybe this isn't for golf. I'll leave it at that. Because the idea is, if you go to Yankee Stadium, you're going to hear gross things there as well. There's going to be fans that go over the top. And it wasn't even walking with Rory. I think you'll agree with this. It wasn't the tone or the volume or the tenor that was the problem here. And there was plenty of gross things that was said. Again, it was the timing of it. When you have fans yelling in backswings and it's impacting the competition, now it's gone too far.
I mean, don't we just need like a Ryder Cup reset at this point? Like, don't we just need to turn down the temperature? I think that's what Rory McIlroy is trying to do in the press conference afterward. Like, golf should be held to a higher standard. Golf teaches so many great life lessons, and yet we're reduced to this sort of boorish behavior. Like, it's we just have to be better than this. Like, in 2023 in the Ryder Cup, they had the pay-for-play gate, and the hats are waving, and Rory's going ballistic in the parking lot. This got really ugly on Saturday afternoon with two dozen cops being called in to police it. It was vulgar. It was ugly. It was unnecessary. I understand the fans were angry because the team had not given them anything to really cheer about. And so instead of cheering, they were heckling. But that's no excuse. I thought a lot of the behavior went over the line. I'm hoping in 2 years' time at Adair Manor, it is not going to be quite that gross. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. You guys know the drill. NBCSports.com/golf, aka golfchannel.com, for all latest news, notes, and updates. It's been a great week at the Ryder Cup. Thanks for listening. Thanks for following along. We'll talk to you guys next week.